reaction to be a positive, but really, very genuinely, and really, not as any kind of a religious belief, but as a non-biased critical thinker, as a critical thinker, and examines the situations, that you come to really see the situation much more in perspective. And as a result of the situation coming much more in perspective, who's suffering more, and why one is suffering, and how this whole thing comes about, then you naturally feel in a sympathetic mind and a compassionate mind, and as a result of sympathetic mind and compassionate mind, you know, you feel, you know, instead of getting upset for upset and angry for angry and violence for violence, you feel kinder to the person. Even if, you know, you cannot smooth the person, but just from your own side, you know, you feel not so much wanting to reciprocate in the same way. Now that's the wisdom, you know. So ethics of being sympathetic or compassionate and kinder, kind person, if it is not to kind of use of one's own mind to analyze the whole situation clearly and with a certain wisdom to really personally have some insight into what's going on, then ideas of being sympathetic or compassionate or kinder becomes oftentimes rules of engagement. And rules of engagement oftentimes doesn't necessarily sit well with the habitual response that comes up from the gut or from the just confusions. But when it backed up with the wisdom, then it's backed up with the wisdom, and wisdom that is more sort of coming from your own kind of analysis and from your own really taking the time to see it from the Buddhist teachings point of view, how it all comes from this kind of confusion of clinging to the self and trying to cherish the self and protect the self regardless of, you know, one's own subconsciousness or awareness being involved, and how that habit, when it's so strong in all of us, how we are without any exceptions, so vulnerable to our emotions, you know, of getting upset when we see anyone as a threat, and when we see anything as in a for help or for us to sort of enjoy, get attached, you know. So in this way, I feel the softening of the heart and the awakening of the mind all has to sort of like a go hand in hand together like that, you know, and always going hand in hand like this. Then also there's this really tremendous, as they say, human has the biggest brain of the all mammals, and it has not used um, something like 85% has been not used. So I think in this way we get to use our own brain, we get to use our own mind, you know, alone with trying to sort of have a more kinder, more compassionate attitude towards world and circumstances. And then the wisdom behind it becoming more, in the beginning maybe perhaps it's a little bit of a teaching from the books or teaching from the teachers, but then later as sort of it really dawns on us as a how this is nothing to do with the books, this is nothing to do with the teachers, this is really to do with your life and how to deal in, how to handle your own life and life's affairs, then it becomes a personal, and it becomes a sort of your own experience. And from there, I think, sense of real benefits of not only just becoming a better person with some kind of higher morals and higher ethics and some kind of morals and ethics that is something that one feels as a practice of religion. Practice of religion that one must actually have to abide with those morals and ethics. Of course that's wonderful, but it has to come also more from personal side of oneself as a sort of who you are and living your life in the society and in the environment and integrating one's life with the world. So I think it comes more from in this way, even beyond religion, one actually becomes better of a person, more of a sort of real, genuine good human beings, genuine good human beings, to know how to be more kinder and compassionate of a person, to relate with others, and value those responses with others, as well as value those qualities within in oneself as a way to sort of help one's own mind as well. And then mostly, most importantly, the wisdom. Most importantly, knowing how to use one's mind. Like almost kind of a going through a whole new schooling of how to use one's mind to kind of analyze and assess. This is really wonderful, wonderful aspect of the Buddha Dharma. You know, and we can be sure if someone is not trained in that, but if someone who has maybe lived a life of a wonderful, decent, good human being, had raised five children and had a profession of being a lawyer or doctor, and now has grandchildren in numbers of 25s, and you know, retired and so forth, but when it comes to using one's mind, using one's mind in a very effective way, using one's emotions in a very effective way to assess what's going on in one's own life as well as one's relation to the world and one's relation to others, and how to, how to sort of have some deep insight into that. It's very obvious that person, however, has had a great life in that way, without the training in the Buddha Dharma and training in the kind of a meditation practice, it's not given that one is, one has this advantage. So that advantage is what the Buddha Dharma offers to us. Buddha Dharma offers to us, and we can actually see it as sort of something that is being offered but not taken, or feel somehow not that attracted to take, just live on our life as usual, or really to take it and make it as ours, and become wiser, deeper, avanar, thinker, and knower, and being able to handle our own minds and our own lives and situations, and as well as our responses with others and world. This aspect is like a, jewel being handed to oneself, and that jewel has to be really owned by you. It has to be made yours, and only when you own it, you feel you own it, and you have made it yours, then it becomes yours. Otherwise, it always, however we appreciate it as a jewel, it always remains in the book, or it always remains in the lips of the teachers, and it never becomes part of you. And that's, not the result that the teachers want, nor the intention of the Buddha is, nor any great scholars or great masters who have written the teachings down. It's not to just simply as a novel, a good novel you read and then you put it on the shelf. It doesn't serve the purpose. It has to be taken very personally and made it yours and owned by you. And in this way, I really do encourage whatever the Thangu Rinpoche has been giving teachings, and all of the things that he's been teaching, one has to made it yours in this way, as a relative means of working with one's mind, and as a relative means of working with one's responses to the world and others, and the depth of the wisdom that is behind that has to be personally understood. And in there, you could start anywhere. It doesn't have to be you start from A to the Z. You could start anywhere where you connect. And just where you connect, try to have some deepening experience in there, to sort of understand one point or 2 point or 3 point. There has to be a couple of points where one connects. You know? And in that point, if you just sort of like a, put an effort to understand the depth of that and how to make it a personal experience of that, then when you have first one, then that turns into five, and then that turns into, you know, 10, and then that turns into 25, and then that turns into 50 points that you really understood from personal, and, you know, one also gets trained, meanwhile, how to do this role, and then everything else that once was a difficult concept or difficult thing to connect also becomes a much easier and accessible to oneself. So then in this way, then, you know, all at some point becomes, you know, in your field of knowledge and in your field of understanding, in your field of personal use of how to engage with those knowledge and understanding of the Buddha Dhamma's wisdom. So that's, you know, the way to go about, instead of feeling so much to know, or there's so much to learn, there's so many points, and being overwhelmed, you know, where to start, you know, and how to start and how to go about it. It doesn't have to be that way. Where you connect, you know, in a 2 hours of a talk, if few points that what actually resonate with you, just remembering that and then trying to analyze oneself more closely to understand the deeper meanings of that, and just try to sort of get to the bottom of how to make it a personal, you know, that would actually serve the purpose. In that way, it's the best way to start. Mm. So in this way, you know, I think using one's mind, one's life and experiences all coming together, no matter how one is aging, never sort of like a thinking that one is too old to now use one's brain or use one's mind or integrate one's life with the teachings or anything like that. Always feeling eager to use it from a small situations, from small experiences to a larger experiences and more of a sort of a poignant experiences that comes in one's way. Always thinking how to tackle this from the dharmic point of view, you know, how to tackle this from the dharmic point of view, not through conceptual only, but through personal experience. You know. And this is how to be the Dharma students. And this is how also, you know, in that way, there's a lot of room for creativity. You know, because one has learned so many things and one has had so many knowledges, but a lot of the times, just if you keep it as in formula that it came, there's not going to be, you know, much of a creativity, but all that came to you with the knowledge and understanding in the formula that it came, if you take it out of the formula that it came as a package or whatever, the way that it has been presented to you, and then, you know, just see from, you know, your own creativity, from your own kind of like state of mind of being, you know, the actor and the director and the critic, all right there. And then, you know, use the different formulas of teachings and different formulas of different formulas of remedies and how to sort of make a new formula, you know, for that particular situation, for that particular kind of a experience, for that particular what one feels is a very unique in some ways, because it's not something that you read it in the scriptures, how to address that particular situation. So if you kind of like think in that way creatively, once you know many formulas and remedies, how you could actually tackle the situation, tackle this particular condition, tackle this particular state of mind with all the, you know, it's like all the different remedies that you have. It's like a, you know, homeopathic doctor, you know. You have many of those bottles on the shelf, and then something new comes up, and then you just kind of think, from what should you take, and from what you should take that will be a good combination over two or three remedies to this situation, and then you sort of like mix up, and then you use it for this situation, and then that perfectly, you know, sometimes of course it hits the point, and sometimes then it doesn't, and then you could again try some other, you know, formulas mix, and then put it into this effect. And in this way I feel a lot of personal creativity is really there, because the Western lifestyle, Western conditions, Western emotions, Western dynamic relations with each other and other, with each other and the social structures may be very different from Eastern, but nonetheless all of this could be addressed with creativity and different ways of working with it, with a creativity. Now, in the first place, to be creative, I think there has to be some education, and there has to be some knowledge, and there has to be some training in the general, and there has to be some kind of a following the practices of, for example, just how to do it. So in the beginning, in the traditional ways, so then one can actually be more creative in this way. But never being able to make a transition from a traditional to a more of a creative way of working with one's own mind, then again sometimes there's a gap, and that gap shows up, and often sometimes that gap becomes then that gap makes the teachings ineffective to some particular situations or states of mind or conditions of mind. But in this way, if one actually grows as a student of the Buddha Dharma, I feel there's a lot of room for anyone and everyone, from young to middle age to older people, to learn and to grow and to, you know, be kind of even to the point of being entertained by the Dharma and the kind of engagement with the Dharma actively in one's mind and with one's practice. And it should be, you know, enjoyable, you know, because there's two kinds of enjoyment, sensory enjoyment and just kind of like wandering off into the sensory pleasure, which often, you know, after a while gets boring, and I think we have already had so much of the sensory indulgence in our life by now, you know, it's a little bit, of course, it's there all the time, and it's there all the time in a sense, as in not that you are attracted, but you know, it's there as just so much kind of as a part of your life or part of the environment, but it's not the same as before. Like, you know, for example, you know, when I was a, you know, younger, you know, certain things that I like to kind of see or hear, or, you know, like see as in movies, or, you know, hear as in music, or, you know, something like that. Of course, now they're there, and of course, sometimes I see, but it's not so much the same attraction to the movies as when I was younger, or so much the same attraction to the music as I was younger. So there's that kind of enjoyment. There's that kind of enjoyment. And then there's the other kind of enjoyment, which is using your own mind well. You know, going deep into your mind and, you know, churning your brain, churning your mind, you know, and coming to sort of like have a more deep insights into life and circumstances and cause and effect of certain complexities that sort of makes oneself or others, you know, bewildered or confused or respond in a sort of particular habitual way, then just tracing those, you know, confusions deep down to the roots and finding what are the, you know, causes and the conditions of those, and how each cause and conditions could be dismantled and dissected, and all of those ways how one can then sort of not be bewildered or overwhelmed, and also maybe perhaps, you know, be helped to others and things like that. Insights into life and circumstances and cause and effect of the interdependent originations of many things. This is a really a very enjoyable, you know, really it brings so much a deep kind of like satisfaction and a deep kind of a personal gratification. Of course, this has to be done with some time in your hand, and also taking some time in your hand in your life to sit down and, you know, close one's eyes and just focus on one thing or the points of the teachings. This kind of an enjoyment, you know, it's so called the enjoyment of the prajna, awakening of one's mind. You know, this really, I feel, you know, as the older one gets, if one uses one's mind more in that way, one uses one's brain in this way, I really feel that a lot of the times now people are very worried about Alzheimer's and, you know, different kind of like, you know, forgetfulness, of one's self, to sort of make one's life more not very comprehensive. I think this, I really feel, can remedy that aspect too. Because one is using one's mind, certain aspects of, you know, one's brains. So one doesn't have to be, you know, so afraid of forgetfulness or, you know, and, or I think if one doesn't become so forgetful and stays sharp in that way, one doesn't have to become also subject to the Alzheimer's, just like that, naturally. And this is also how traditionally people are trained to stay sharp. And even in the Abhidharma training in the clear ones, is trained in this way, you know, kind of being able to dissect and stay sharp and try to remember points that just once heard and things like that. So this kind of an enjoyment is what I think the Dharma offers, awakening of the mind and softening of the heart. Awakening of the mind is just really using one's mind full in a full capacity of yours in the time, in the moment. And that can grow. You know, if one is using 5% of that right now, rather than just not using it at all, that would be the awakening of mind. And then if one is using 10%, that would be the awakening of mind. You know? And when we do 5%, the 10% comes naturally easier. When we have not done 5%, then 10% is going to be difficult to come right away. So in this way, whatever one is using to kind of deepen one's knowledge and understanding and wisdom through the engagement with the Dharma and insights into one's life, integrated with one's life, that's the awakening. And the softening is, it's always in relation to how one can have a better relation. As with the emotions, how one can have a better relations with one's own mind, with one's own self. Right now we have so many conflicts with ourselves. You know, so many, a lot of the times we do one small thing and we beat up ourselves. You know, we say one small thing and we beat up ourselves. And we feel one small thing and we beat up ourselves. You know, and we have so many conflicts in this way. And then, of course, it's the same thing with others. We say one small thing, sometimes it becomes, you know, a big thing. And we do one small thing, so it becomes a big thing. And we do one, you know, wrong thing, it can kind of have big repercussions. Why this is happening is because, you know, one's emotional relation to one's own mind is not soft. When one's emotional relation to one's own mind is not very sympathetic or kind and soft, you know, soft, then it's very difficult to have that with the outside world and others. You know? Now with the insight and the understanding and the wisdom of the Dharma, you know, how this all happens, if it can transform one's emotion to one's own mind, softer, more of an understanding, more of a kinder, more of a sympathetic, more of a compassionate, you know, not indulgent, not making always excuses for oneself or anything like that, but just really kind of, you know, non-indulgent, non-making excuses, but yet at the same time, you know, seeing how we are vulnerable, unless we have some awakening mind to the habits. And in that way, then, if we can actually have a, you know, kind of a relation with the world and compassionate of a relation with the world and sympathetic relation with the world, and also more of an our world, softer our relation with the world, I don't think, you know, if you look at the great teachers, neither they are hard on themselves nor they are hard on others. You know? They are not sort of like, you know, having so many conflicts with themselves, nor they have so many conflicts with others. You know? They are very sort of like gentle with themselves and sympathetic and kind and compassionate with anything they do, anything and everything that they actually are related with themselves and as well as with others. You know? I think it just comes naturally that way. And that's the example to kind of follow and be attracted to. These are all, I'm just simply saying what we must be attracted to for the Buddha Dharma and the Buddha Dharma in our lives. You know, attracted not in the sense of kind of a dilatory, in a negative terms, but attracted in a positive, you know, inspired in a positive ways. So I will leave it here. If you have any questions, please do. Yes, please.
I suppose you have an interest in the Rimei tradition.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you could speak of it. How are things going in the Rimei in America? Or is there a movement within Buddhism and outside Buddhism across traditions?
The Rimei tradition is really the key, from my point of view. I have said this to one close friend of mine, teacher. You know, for Buddhism to really survive in the Western world and to live long and be a benefit, there has to be a Rimei attitude and Rimei approach. And Rimei doesn't mean, as always it didn't mean, that you mix up everything, you know. Rimei actually means, suppose you could do your own tradition and you could actually keep your own tradition quite pristine and clean, not getting mixed in with anything else, but a sense of honor and respect for other traditions and sense of real reverence to other traditions as also a great path of wisdom and great path of skillful means to attain enlightenment. And also not only just have some sense of honor and respect and reverence, but you know, since this is of the Buddha Dharma, since this is of the you know, Vajrayana Buddha Dharma, to also time to time make connections, you know, and receive some of the teachings and some of the empowerments and some of the transmissions, and then not getting mixed in, you could also do that. Okay, that's what the Jami Tenzin Wangpo did. That's what the Jami Phupong Lodhita did. And in this way, then I think all the different Buddha Dharma and different Sanghas, from the Theravada to the Vajrayana, and from the Vajrayana, from the Tibetan or Buddhism, from the different schools, all can support one another. You know, support one another, and we are such a kind of a wholesome one, extended kind of a family. And in that way, I really see that there is a real future of the Buddha Dharma and the strength of the Buddha Dharma in the world to sort of prevail against sort of, let's say, you know, materialism and so as also the sort of conflicts of conflicts of, though people say religion, it's not really conflicts of religion, it's conflicts of people's emotions. you know, we can actually kind of divert from that. And I think it's going well. I think it's going well, but still I think there has to be some kind of discussions about that widely among the teachers as well as also among the sanghas, as in how the key survival of the Buddha Dharma in the West in the long term depends upon the Vinaya attitude. Well, thank you all very much. I will conclude here.
We'll do the long life prayers in English. Last two pages. In this pure realm, surrounded by snow mountains, is the source of complete happiness and benefit. Hallowed be Yashvara, Tenzin Gyatso. May you stand firm until the end of existence. Unborn, eternal, self-arising Dharmakaya, arises as the miraculous kayas of form. May the three secrets of the karma be stable in the larger nature, and may his limitless Buddha activities spontaneously blaze. Splendor of the teachings, karma overall, may you remain steadfast. Your qualities of glorious and excellent karma be reduced to those days. May your lotus feet always be stable. And may your Buddha activity of teaching the practice blaze victoriously in all directions. By this merit, may all attain omniscience, may it defeat the enemy of wrongdoing, from the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, from the ocean of samsara, may all beings be free.
Rinpoche, it's so special to have you here.
Thank you.
At Chogyam Rinpoche Center. And thank you so much for your teachings and your encouragement to really digest these teachings and make them our own. So thank you, and we'd love to have you come back again next year.
Thank you.
And we have a present for you, a photograph of Chogyam Rinpoche here.
Oh, wonderful. Thank
in
you.
Maine.
Wonderful.
By the ocean.
Oh, this is beautiful.
Yeah.
I want that photo of family.
Rinpoche.
Thank you very much. It's a gift from all of us.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you all. Thank you all for being a practitioner and working with one's mind and helping as much as you could the world and the beings in doing it. So,
thank you.